I'll get comments frequently asking, like, how do I manage a team that's so much older than me? Like I have imposter syndrome, like crazy. And so it is, it's human nature. Like, I come from a place of meeting people where they are, trying to, I've managed people who are older than me. And I've had that very human feeling of like, because also a lot of us, you know, they think like when you're in middle school, like, oh my God, a sixth grader, I've never talked to a seventh grader. Why would a seventh grader never talk to me?
And
like,
totally. it goes back to middle school.
It goes back, everything in life goes back to middle school. I can say that as we're a all parent just of a middle schooler. Yeah, we're all big kids.
You're listening to It Gets Late Early, a show about the experience of getting older in the tech industry. I'm your host, Maureen Wiley Clough. Let's dive in.
Welcome to It Gets Late Early. Today, I have a very special guest with me who does quite a few things, but what you may be most familiar with her work on would be her role as the co-host of the HR Besties podcast, as well as her role as the founder of Manager Method, which is all over social media, every single platform, really. And she is an ex-lawyer as well as an ex-HR practitioner. So today I have Ashley Hurd with me, aka Manager Method and co-host of the HR Besties podcast. Welcome.
Thank you, Mo. I'm so glad to be here.
Well, I'm thrilled that you're here. And I think we should kick off with, can you explain? I mean, for example, I would say, especially in the tech industry, we are in desperate need of good management training. And as far as I have seen in my own experience and experienced as someone who has been managed by other people, it is in very short supply out there. So please let us in on why you came to create this method.
Well, I thought about names actually quite a while ago. So I've had Manager Method about 2.5 years, like in earnest. But I actually thought of it. I was living abroad in Australia, so I live in the U.S. I live in Atlanta, but lived in Sydney from 2016 to 2018, which I can't recommend enough. And was thinking about if we were to stay here. Like I was a general counsel and head of HR for a U.S. company, but I'm like, if I wanted a more reasonable work hours, what could I do and what could I start? And I thought about, what do I really like? And I did the practice of Ikigai, which is the Japanese, it's IKIGAI. I'm almost positive.
Yes, I've heard about this.
It's really helpful. Anybody listening, like, you know, while you're listening, just look it up. And it's basically four questions, I think four, about like what you like to do, what people need, what you can do, what can make a living. And so I thought about how I've always liked to help people have difficult conversations. And sometimes that's like a performance conversation or even, God forbid, a layoff conversation, but to do it more humanely. But even sometimes it's like having a one-on-one with your direct report. And so I wanted to start a business about doing that and giving tips and talking points to managers about having that. And so I thought of names. Somehow I thought of Manager Method. I bought the domain like 7 years ago and did nothing with it for many years and like a lot of things. But really everything from when I first started to this day is to help provide actual practical tips to managers to help their teams and have those ripple effects and help managers grow in their careers.
That's fantastic. And it confounds me as to why organizations don't actually push this up in terms of prioritization. This is so critical to employee morale, to employee development, to tenure, longevity of these employees at their companies. It baffles me that they don't seem to focus in on this more. So I think there's a real need for this in the market. How's the response been for you?
It's been great. I mean, I have a flagship Manager 101 package. That's a course. And the idea was to have conversations that I've had across industry as a lawyer, but also really HR, of like how you delegate, how you manage conflict, even how you onboard people, and then just things to know, both for US and then to a bit like global things that I happen to know from 20 years as a lawyer in HR, but do it in like a very digestible conversational way. And so I created that originally for individual managers. But what I realized is individual managers, if they're going and finding this training, they're probably far better than and they're not being required to do so by their employer. I'll add that. they're probably far, far better off. But what then happened is organization. So now almost everything I do is working with organizations where they'll get this for their managers. And I also then created a toolkit for organizations to then run internal trainings where the HR or people contact, especially those junior contacts that you know, this may be their first time presenting in HR, people teams can lead these sessions for even senior managers to have them practice scenarios. And so that's, the response has been awesome. And especially with social media, but really what I've liked is hearing from managers that are like, oh, I never thought about this, or I didn't know what it meant, what empathy actually meant.
That's huge. That's absolutely huge. And one thing I really love about your style is that you infuse everything with a bit of realism and relatability, as well as some humor. And, you know, to that end, I feel like you've gained this great platform and a lot of this attention from people who are suffering at work, right? And they're going through this struggle with their managers and lack of career progression advice and mentorship and all of that. And your videos really hit the nail on the head there. So I'd love for you to, who's Luke? Can you tell my audience, who's this Luke guy I keep seeing?
Luke is a fictional, I'm quoting, doing air quotes, if you're listening. Luke is a fictional, but a leader. But what Luke really is your kind of quintessential leader that's come from often a place of privilege, so has not had the experience that a lot of those employees below them on the corporate ladder have had, that also has not had manager training prior to this, but has ended up in these very high levels of an organization and doesn't really think about anybody other than themselves and their goals and the pressures that they're facing. And so as a result, that comes out in policies that don't always make sense, or kind of callous behaviors, but often under the guise of not thinking about what that experience is like for others. So I have been validated yet horrified that Luke is a very real character in many organizations. He is a quintuplet times many, but that is my origin story of Luke.
I've known a few Lukes, I'm not going to lie. They seem to be all over the place in the tech industry.
Hey, quick break here. If you or anyone you know are looking for a new tech job and you're aiming for a company that understands the value of experienced workers, sign up for our email list where we'll send you jobs from companies that we hand select as a fit for tech employees over 40. Go to itgetslateearly.com and add your email. Now back to the show.
I wanted to kind of settle in on a big topic that's out there in the tech industry right now, and that is one of layoffs. And these just seem to be, they're frankly like contagion at this point, and it's like, it's going nuts. And I'm wondering, what advice would you give to people at these tech companies who have to have these difficult conversations? Like, how would you advise, for example, a Luke out there on how to deliver this news, how to let that cascade through his organization? And I'm saying he on purpose, yeah, because as you point out, by having him be named Luke, it's usually a dude. I feel like what I've seen out there is indicative of people who have not had PR training or management training. And so I guess I'd love to hear what you think would be more of an optimal way to do something that's quite unfortunate. And I think in many cases, extremely unnecessary, because used to be because of, you know, the economy and results and whatnot. And now it's just like, oh, you know, we'd like to make some more money for ourselves, take some of these profits. So let us in on that.
I agree. And I'll say there are definitely some Lucies out there. Maybe that's the best counterpart to Luke's. But I have had Luke and I've stuck with it. I've had people that comment and say, why is it always man? I'm like, well, it's just the same name I picked. So, but I'm happy to give you plenty of examples.
We can't win.
Non-male identifying. But I do. And I won't, and I'll start with saying layoffs are just flat out awful. And I know that layoffs, where they're often happening, especially in the tech world, is you have, you know, the PE firms or whoever's the funding. And so it's these layers above, and their goal is, everyone's goal is to make a lot of money and do all of this. But when you have those layers above, it makes it a lot easier for them on to remove that human lens. And so they see it as a spreadsheet. Titles, sometimes names, but just flat out titles, and not thinking about the humans behind that and those ripple effects that you're having for those people being let go and the people remaining. And likewise in tech companies, what you often have are I'd say legal teams. Like when these decisions are made, I all the time we hear of like, why does HR do this? And HR frequently is the last to know about this, and often is not that decision maker, which is shocking, but absolutely true. Frequently, it does come from that that finance lens, even the board or PE firm. But so oftentimes who gets looped in before HR is legal. And I say this having been legal, Ashley. And so legal in a lot of tech companies is really heavy on a corporate background, meaning people that are skilled at putting deals together, buying and selling companies, doing financial, this is all the things they've been trained on doing. They often have not had virtually any employment law experience, because law school isn't like medical school or where you, you know, at least have, you know, some core competencies. Like most lawyers I know have never had an employment law course and haven't dealt with it in real life. And so it's just not a skill set. And so I have now worked with a number of organizations of people I know who are the sole, it's like tale as old as time. They're the sole lawyer for their company. They have a corporate background and they're going to do a layoff, and they stop and they say, oh, is there anything we should be thinking about? And I say, aside from my pushes to rethink a lot of things you can do besides a layoff, which is many other episodes of which, you know, I know you cover and have thoughts on, but having those conversations, I say, okay, so stop. So think about everything and how it's going to be received by everybody. Like some of the decisions people will make are, we want to have a big call and announce it to everybody. When should we time that? Should we tell them and let everybody know the next day is going to be this big call? And I say, you know, there's no perfect, but think about these things. So you're making everyone lose sleep overnight. We're going to have a big call. And first we're going to start out with talk about our business and the state of the business. And I tell people, and this is where I can be a helpful little, you know, Jiminy Cricket, because I say totally well-intentioned. Like I completely get it, what you want to do, especially they're thinking about the employees or team members remaining and motivating them. I say, right. But the second people have a glimpse that there's going to be a layoff, no one gives a shit about your company. No one is going to be listening to you, and you're not doing yourself favors by thinking that they will. So immediately 100%. Give people that information. And so some of it is thinking about like the pacing and sequencing is give people information and think about the things that people care about most. In that instance, it's not going to be, you know, your organization, and you can have messaging later to those remaining, but to those who are losing their jobs, they don't need to hear how excited you are for Q4.
Oh my gosh, that boils my blood. I feel like it was Stripe that did that particularly terribly. And then like somehow, and this confounded me, the Stripe founders were praised for their response to the layoff. And I was like, I'm sorry, are we reading the same document here? Like, what?
I remember when they first started an organization called the Mom Project, you know, great ostensibly purpose, but they'd done, this was like middle of 2022, let's say, maybe getting my years wrong at this point. But so it's before there'd been a lot of tech layoffs. And so they did this announcement. And my other thing is thinking about the sequencing and thinking about people want that information and do things to minimize people's pain as much as possible and the stress that they're going to have. Also think about proactively, what do you have to say? Every organization is not Microsoft and Google and going to make headlines. And so organizations will put all this PR resources and honestly money into the statement that they're going to write. But I remember when I read the Mom Project and I was like, what is this? It said, you know, there will not be go forward roles for many at the organization. And I have heard a lot of terms for layoffs. I had never heard go forward roles. And so if I have to think about like, what does that really mean? Just use words. So it's thinking about your statements is stop spending so much money on these external consultants. Use it to retain the employees that you have and just think common sense. I say one of the best things organizations can do is to have, if that CEO has an executive assistant or you have those that have a real sense of what life is like, have them read it and what their thoughts would be and listen to that and compensate them accordingly. But the more people and the higher the titles that read it, the more you're going to get made fun of on social media by the vast majority of people reading it.
That's a really good point. It just strikes me as so crazy that a lot of these organizations don't seem to have even just done the slightest bit of a fit check with people who are not in the exact same position. I'm like, guys, this is an own goal. This is an unforced error. Like, don't do this.
It's so true, Mo. And so it's really a lot of this is thinking, well, it'll be weak. You know, we have to look strong. So we need to use big words and use buzzwords and these things. And so I think to your original question as well is then what do you do to those that have the conversations is also to organizations of who has the conversations. If it's a small enough group, then your top leader, that CEO, should not just be posting the crying selfie on LinkedIn or having the platitudes. Have some of those conversations with people like that want to hear, and also people's direct manager. But giving training to those people having that conversation, you know, the worst experience is having your job taken away from you. And that job loss is very real trauma. But there's mm-hmm. also a lot of variation in how that message is delivered. And those people that are having those conversations frequently haven't had it before, no matter you know what their age or experience, they may not have had it before. And they're super uncomfortable. And so when people get uncomfortable, you know, they push things away. And so, you know, you may have managers that they're literally reading verbatim from a script. And again, that script has only been approved by your outside corporate counsel, and you haven't had a human lens person, you know, think about it. They don't know what to say if someone raises different questions, and so they don't think about this idea of looking someone in the eye or the camera at the very least, and having that, you know, as a resource. And so that's it, is looking people in the eye the best you can, using your talking points as a script, but like talking realistically to people and stopping and listening to their questions. For organizations, proactively thinking about the questions that you might get. If you're in HR, you know, people are going to have questions about their benefits. What is this? What about my computer? And telling people, some people in that moment may not be ready to have that conversation, but having those ready and setting up later time if they need. But a lot of this is just arming with managers and reminding them, if this is uncomfortable for you, it's so much worse for those people having the message. And so just think about that in giving that level of human care, even in a really tough circumstance.
Yeah. We've lost so much of the human touch in this experience, I think. And to your point, it's a really difficult experience for both sides, but it's infinitely worse for the person being laid off, losing their sense of stability, their sense of self. I mean, we tie so much of our self-worth to our work in the society, which is another subject altogether. But, I'm wondering, I've gotten reports, and I can't name these companies because I would get in deep trouble for it, but there have been reports to me about these layoffs being conducted in some ways that make my head explode, and especially when I think about the legal ramifications. And so I want to ask you to put your lawyer hat on for a moment, which I'm sure you'll never really take off, let's be honest. But but I heard about this one company that sent an email out to its employees who were managers who had impacted employees on their teams and said, you have to lay off X number of people on your teams in an hour. Make that decision. We don't want this to get leaked to the media or anything. So we're sending it to you now. You have this hour to make those decisions. And to me, I can't help but think, oh my gosh, can you imagine how much affinity bias gets in there? How much nepotism gets in there? How much of this, my buddy, I don't want to let him go. How much just seeps in there that would make it potentially a very discriminatory layoff, and how could this stand? What are your thoughts on that?
Well, that type of justification of giving it to people's complete discretion is ripe for creating layoff decisions that, when they filter out over to court, especially in the U.S., do not stand. In part because you know organizations can have, when you're making employment decisions, have especially in the U.S., a fair amount of business discretion. And so, you know, what can we point to, things like that. But lawyer hat, Ashley, is it has to be objective and feel fair. And sometimes that means, an employee doesn't agree with it, but that doesn't mean that it's necessarily illegal and things like that. And,
right.
And all the legalities of layoffs are so complex. But one thing organizations don't realize and think about is, in the U.S., there's two types of employment discrimination. One is intentional, like disparate treatment, what's called. And so that's like you make a decision because of someone's race, gender, age, you know, disability, medical leave, blah, 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 whatever protected category depends on where you're located. But the other that people often aren't as aware of is disparate impact, which means that you have a policy that can impact people. And so, you know, this idea of giving managers unfettered discretion, like I intentionally do not do litigation and will never do litigation again. I can say, having sat through especially mock juries where you get to hear a lot of their feedback, if a mock jury is sitting something and someone is on the stand for the company and saying, well, yes, we didn't want it to get leaked, and so we told every manager, you have an hour to decide this. That jury is going to hear, like, you made a reality show out of people's careers and let managers decide this. And so, you know, regardless of everything, they're not going to think very favorably about you. And that's likely going to make headlines. And so it's thinking about, like, assuming in any layoff, people are going to hear about it. And so stop trying to hide it and think about what you can do to support those affected and motivate those remaining so that you don't have to do this again. And so you can drive that productivity that ostensibly you want to continue as a company. But yeah, any practice that sounds weird when people say it, it sounds super weird and very expensive in a courtroom, especially if you're like in California or somewhere.
Yeah. Yeah, no, that's a really good point. That's a really good point. Quite pricey indeed.
Do you have a work issue you just can't seem to solve? Ann Morris and Francis Fry want to help you. They're leadership coaches who have solved problems at some of the world's biggest companies. Now they're sharing their expertise with you on their podcast, Fixable. No dilemma is too big or too small. Call 234-FIXABLE to fix your issues in 30 minutes or less. Really. Once again, that's 234-FIXABLE. And don't forget to tune into Fixable to hear their problem solving in action. Back to the show.
I wanted to ask you about a statistic that I saw recently, and it was around the subject of burnout. And, you know, I'm an elder geriatric millennial as of sorts, and I have been told my entire life that all I need to do is to continue to climb that corporate career ladder. That was how I get ahead. That's how I secure my place in the workforce. And certainly when I think about the age demographics in the tech industry, I had this gnawing sense that if I don't hit VP by 40 or even before, like, there's not a place for me in this industry. So I needed to preserve my seat at the table. So, but what I've read is that unfortunately, a lot of the layoffs have actually hit middle management more than other rank and file employees. And so I wanted to ask your opinion on, you know, is promotion, is that still the path to go? And not only that, I've heard that 43% of managers are experiencing burnout at present. So it's kind of like losing its luster for me a little bit.
Yeah, I mean, I think a lot is losing its luster because you have this whole group of people that are expected to do more now, literally more with less now. And so I think it's really important to stop this idea that there has to be this, you know, trajectory. Having worked as a lawyer in a law firm, a big law firm, big law firms have it. It's like this path. Having worked in consulting, like it's this idea of, you know, upper out, that kind of mentality is really common, sometimes very formally such. Like if you have not, it's either formally or you'll get it in a strong whisper. That if you haven't made this by a certain age or tenure, then, you know, it's time to look elsewhere. I think that is such a complete miss for any type of organization, especially those that serve clients. Like, having been a general counsel, I don't want a law firm lawyer that feels like they've had to like move in this or like that their hourly rate keeps increasing. But in tech, it's this pressure that you get to have a certain title or the differences that you can have. I think a thing more organizations need to do is to recognize like what that literally the ikigai exercise. Do you like leading people? Do you know what that means and what a manager's real job is? And now you're seeing organizations that have stripped some of that management level away, now realizing, oh shoot, well now you have all these people that are direct reports that like are all reporting to the same person. They're not getting any type of leadership. And so now like, okay, well now we need to restructure and give them some leadership back. And so I think organizations are really seeing that if they're trying to stretch managers too thin. But ultimately it should be encouraged to think about what value do you bring? What do you enjoy doing? And how does that make sense? How does that make business sense? And it really is a conversation. It doesn't mean the organization dictating your path. It also doesn't mean that team member doing all the work to like justify having a career that brings them stability and joy. But I really think it's meeting in the middle. But I think there's a lot of fear in people to not want to raise their hand and say like, I dread every day waking up. I don't like what I'm doing. I would love to do this, but like, I'm also afraid of getting fired if I say that.
Yeah, that there's not much space for that in the workforce, it seems.
There's not
radical transparency.
There's not, but when there is, right, when there is, when like I will get, I mean, I certainly get comments all the time of like horrible workplace, true trauma, like actual trauma. But also, I'll get things, people talking about things in the workplace. And the word I frequently see is lucky. I'm so lucky because my company encouraged me when I said I didn't want to be a manager. They said that's okay, have an expert career path. I'm so lucky. Lucky, like that's exactly what everybody deserves. And so there's this skew, I think, that people think that it's how it is how it should be. And I don't think that's the case. And I don't think it's how it needs to be. So that's why I keep plodding along.
Well, I love that sentiment. And certainly the work you're doing is moving us towards that place where we aren't just going to have to luck our way into a workplace. I want to touch on intergenerational workforce politics, especially when it comes to management, which is obviously your area of expertise. And, you know, we have five generations at work together in the workplace right now, which creates a lot of benefits and its fair share of challenges. And so certainly in the tech industry, there will be many people who will have managers who will be perhaps even decades younger than they are, or the reverse. And so I wanted to get some potential tips on how you think people can handle age, a very differently aged manager. It's interesting because I saw some statistics that suggested that people would vastly prefer having a 30-year-old manager than someone in his or her 60s, right? So there's this interesting preference, but nonetheless, there are some potential situations that could unfold that might not be all that pleasant. And so how can we deal with having either a manager who's a lot older or younger than ourselves, or vice versa, being one?
I mean, I think it is an incredibly good question, especially I think in tech, you can see that, and you see, and I'll get comments frequently asking like, how do I manage a team that's so much older than me? Like I have imposter syndrome, like right. Crazy. And so,
hard.
It is. Human nature, I come from a place of meeting people where they are, trying to. I've managed people who are older than me, and I've had that very human feeling of because also a lot of us, you know, they think like when you're in middle school, like, oh my God, a sixth grader? I've never talked to a seventh grader. Why would a seventh grader never talk to me?
And like, totally. It goes back to middle school.
It goes back. Everything in life goes back to middle school. I can say that as we're a all parent just of a middle schooler. Yeah, we're all big kids. And so you feel like there's this hierarchy and you earn things based on years. And so all of a sudden in the workplace, like, wait, hold on a second. And so I think it is positive move more towards this idea of skills and interest in developing that. And so one of the biggest steps, I think, is acknowledging that. And as when you have people, especially when they're first into management, but even if they have for a while, asking, what are your thoughts about managing someone who happens to be age-wise much older than you? And do you have, you know, fears about that? Or those relationships of, you may have someone that's very senior in your career. And so if I'm a very senior person now, which I'm barely hanging on to the technically millennial, like by a matter of days.
You and me both.
I'd rather have a junior manager that says, you know, this is, I know, you know, you're capable of what you do. My job is to make your job easier and to make you successful in whatever that looks like. And I want to support you. That type can really frame that conversation and undo very quickly a lot of that natural tension that exists because people never talk about it.
Never.
And so, and I think this is where I am a LinkedIn Learning instructor. And so I have a course coming out this spring on AI for managers, specifically ChatGPT.
Awesome.
And I tell people, like, always abide by your organization's AI policy, like Lawyer Ashley, blah, blah, blah. But even say, asking some of those questions like that on the fly, like if you're new of saying, like, how do I manage those relationships if I'm managing someone that's much younger than me? Or I love this question, this poll of, would people want to? Because my guess is that people would say, because they assume someone who's in their 60s may have that mentality of like, earn your stripes, you know, yes. work first, and you may think someone in their 30s doesn't. And I think exactly. You will see that very wildly by personality. And exactly. So I do think having some of that training, and you know, it's like the lawyer, Ashley, is like, age things are hard. And I've seen things go wrong of like, performance reviews where, you know, we need a more fresh approach.
Proxy yes, all that coded language. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. The coded language, or even you see job descriptions, it'll say we have this role, you know, 4 to 6 years experience, 4 to 10 years experience. You say, tell me why there should be a maximum, like why should there right. almost ever be a maximum years of experience ever?
Yeah. And you find me a 50-year-old who identifies as a rock star ninja, you know?
Like, yeah, exactly. And so, but I think is having some of those conversations, and then for that manager is understanding the power of questions. I mean, there can be a lot of books that talk about this. And I've loved, I mean, one of the, not first, but like probably one of those, like I still, Radical Candor is one of those well-known books in this. And I love it. I really love what Kim Scott has done. And she has like a free book club on her website where you can ask these questions. But so framing it, just knowing, like, you know, people are coming to work, and just like you maybe feel, you know, oh, weird about managing someone older than you, they may have those thoughts. Like, I'm like, oh my God, exactly. I'm the manager of my kids. But
exactly,
it's about establishing and really showing that truth that you are there to support them. And you can very quickly undo a lot of that, you know, natural tension by following through and truly doing what you can to support them.
And meeting people at that personal level, I mean, we are more alike than we are dissimilar, you know, all the generations, right? We all really kind of want the same things. It might be for different reasons, potentially, based on our own life circumstances and the place and stage we are in life, but we're not that different, right? And so there's more that unites us than divides us there. And so we really need to work on having that just like connection with one another. And if you can stop othering people and placing stereotypes on them based on their specific generation, right, that's going to help. And certainly I love all the hilarious jokes out there that are about generations personally, but I know some people don't because of that, you know, division factor. Right. But I think if we can work on actually increasing age diversity at organizations, it's going to benefit everybody, employees and the organizations included. And at present, unfortunately, only 8% of companies reportedly by PwC's reports say that they have focused on age diversity. So it's really, it's a gold mine of potential opportunity. And it's also a necessity with our aging population. So
I think it's so true. I mean, I remember when I was still in law school, we moved to Atlanta, and my husband's great aunt, Norma, had said to me, she had me come over, and we've done a lot with him. And she said, it's so good to have friendships of different generations. And at the time, I didn't appreciate, like, I was like, okay, you know, I like your friend, you know, very surface. Like, well, I like it. I love hanging out with you. She's like a third or fourth mom to me. And like, oh, that's great. But I didn't appreciate it until I was older. And I now have on different sides, those different ones. And I think it's, but I think this aspect of organizations and those younger managers, and especially those younger CEOs leading, to understand what that experience can be like for older individuals in the workplace who feel this tension or that there's a lot of assumptions about them. My mother had graduated college later in life. She went and got her library degree, and she got her law degree when she was in her 50s.
And so she awesome. Was, what a great
I love,
story.
My mom's story is fantastic. But so she finished near the top of her class in law school. She'd probably tell me to say top of her class, but like very close. So she's fantastic. But she was interviewing at larger law firms and didn't get like the final, you know, callbacks for anything. And I had found an email exchange, and now it's been a couple of years. It was right when I started Manager Method. Of course, I'm like, forwarding it to her, and we're both crying. But in it, she talked about how it was really like, what, you know, Billie Eilish, what was I made for? But just like it just feels so shitty to be set to have the things you're afraid of happen. And so, she'd interned at this state agency, and she's like, I really like this work. And I said, well, if you like it, do it. So anyway, mom ended up going on and joining the state agency. She went from being an intern to she just retired end of last year, so end of December, as their general counsel.
Congrats.
And so like having moved through those. And so I just think if you give people an opportunity, especially in age in the workplace, and have that level of diversity and have people, oh, they're approaching retirement. What do I do with them? Have them train, ask people. I'd rather sit through a corporate meeting instead of having Luke, the CEO, tell me, you know, make jokes about vacations and like cringe the whole time.
And rocket ship emojis.
Rocket ship, total, the ChatGPT rocket ship emoji. But to have your employees close to retirement, any of them, have one of them or multiple of them do a panel and talk about their career lessons. Because I can guarantee you that session will be far more memorable and impactful, not just for those people having the opportunity to tell their story, but those that listen and bring that sense of humanity in the workplace. So that is probably my last tip on that.
Well, and 100%. I mean, Gen Z is clamoring for mentorship. And so that session that you just suggested, all the Lukes of the world, please listen up. We want mentorship. We want experienced professionals at work to show us the ropes and share what they've been through. They can see around corners in ways that we cannot. And, you know, I have always been super grateful for the fact that I've been able to be, I mean, proverbially now, shoulder to shoulder with people who've been there, done that, and have the ability to share with me. And I feel for people who are coming up in their careers, earlier in their careers, who haven't had the opportunity to get to know people in person the way I did back in my earlier, software as a service days. So it's, you know, that human element is so critical. So I hope we can figure out ways to do that remotely, because despite all that RTO nonsense we're seeing everywhere, the forced mandates, which I really think are layoffs in disguise, because the PR is a hell of a lot better for that. They just didn't want to come back, right? Which, by the way, I also think hits older workers harder, but I need some data. But it's just, it's one of those things where we need to figure out how to pass the knowledge and the wisdom of people who've been there, done that, to people below us. But I also want to point out that this is bidirectional. And you wrote a post, I remember, a few months back on LinkedIn saying mentorship isn't just one way. And I loved that. I loved that so much, because I learned just as much from people who are younger than I am as I do from people who are the same age or older. And I, in fact, myself have employed two individuals who are younger than I am in the making of this podcast. And they have taught me so much, immeasurably helped my growth. So it really, it does not have to go one way.
I agree. Really, I mean, I think it's age. And I think it's also, I don't know if you've seen this, Mo, but like also title is there are like, one of the things that spurred on my post was including that like one of the mentors to me was executive assistants. Like they often tend to have seen a lot, seen how a lot of things go. They know the details. So they have the story. So that is a post, a company, a happy hour that you'll never forget, because they are the keepers of that. But I do think when you have some of those individuals and that have done maybe the same job for a really long time, or you have even like at a workplace, like the janitorial staff that you see, everyone sees them that, but have them talk about their life story, you know, their career, and listen to that. And I guarantee you people will have a lot of lessons. And so thinking about that, the people that you can learn from, agree. It's age, people very different from you, and also people that they internally may not think that theirs is a story that people would want to listen to.
Right. No, that's true. We do have that internal narrative often precluding us from sharing and being around others. I agree. Another person alongside those executive assistants that you mentioned who do have that really great sort of 30,000 foot view and intricate understanding of an organization would be those in HR. So I want to shift gears and talk about HR Vesties, because it is a podcast that if you haven't listened to it yet, please go run, download it. It's fantastic. It's hosted by Ashley, Jamie Jackson of Millennial Misery and Humorous Resources, which are two of my absolute favorite meme accounts on the internet. And then of course, past guest and lovely human, Lee Elena Henderson, AKA HR Manifesto. So I want to talk about how this came to be. It's such a great show. You guys fuse hilarious episodes with, you know, certain conversations around antics at work, things that will blow your mind that have happened in the workplace, especially that launch episode that you guys did, like the first 2 seconds. Oh my gosh, are you kidding me? And then, but what you also deliver is really incredible business advice and insights, and you really demystify what HR professionals everywhere are going through on the daily. So love it. Please tell us how it got to be here on our feeds.
And I will say a huge plug for Mo's interview with Lee Elena Henderson. Again, listen to all of Mo's episodes, but I really, in particular, I love that one.
Thank you.
And like I, you know, had known, as sometimes you, when you start posting things online, sometimes you'll have connections with people. And so I, you know, Lee, you'll see, she doesn't follow anybody. She follows our podcast account on TikTok and Instagram. That's it. She doesn't follow anybody else individually. But I had started to follow her. I started in January of 22 posting on TikTok. And that summer on LinkedIn, I'd done some posts. And it was like Lee Elena Henderson. And I didn't realize that was HR Manifesto. But I was like, I know this person. And I looked. I was like, oh my God, I love her stuff. And so, of course, sent like a...
So good. You know,
hey, like me at Manager Method, again, like not a big account, like no, like not big. And so
we all start somewhere.
We all start somewhere. And so, but she looked, she's like, oh, I've always gotten around along with the lawyers. We end up doing a Zoom and we got off and I got this email from her that was like, will not include this 4-letter word, but she's like, oh, we could have like talked all day. and we started talking and we kind of thought about like, oh, maybe it'd be interesting to do a podcast, tossing it around. And then Jamie, I talked to her, actually had like talked to her at times more about like just kind of work stuff and bantering around. I was in the like a Great Wolf Lodge with my kids in May of last year, May of 23. So this is like years in the gift shop. And there was like this like shirt. Like, it was like, which I did do an Instagram video. Like every once in a while I do some videos that are like come with mom. And so I did one about Great Wolf Lodge. There was like a 90s themed hat and I laughed and took a picture and sent it to Jamie. I was like, wait a second. oh my God, she'd be so good on a podcast. Like, she's so funny. Because I was saying to my husband, like, oh my God, Jamie's so funny.
So funny. Glad to see her from behind the meme, you know, like getting her.
Exactly. Like, exactly. I love it. And so she has now Horrendous HR, which is her account, which is more of her voice, which I really love to hear. And so
love
we did the Zoom kind of see, and we're like, let's try this. And so it was kind of fortuitous luck of I'd worked in radio. I worked in the radio as a lawyer. So I did a lot of contract, you know, like a lot of contracts on the not fun side. but we made it, you know, made it come together and worked with a great team to launch. So we launched in October of 23. And it just we had never, when we recorded it, our first season, recorded 8 episodes in person. We'd never met each other. We had literally like a bullet point for each episode. And then we're like, oh, we'll do a staff meeting. So we That's had amazing. No idea the stories. So each episode is like a story, a cringy corporate speak, more of the meat of the episode, and then questions and comments. So we have no idea what the story is going to be. And so when Lee said the first two words of our episode, which is our, it's called We Are Not the Enemy podcast. So that'll tell you my yes. approach to HR of we should not be the enemy. And in it, we talk about how not every HR is as, you know, thinks about things like we do, but things that you can do as HR. And so that's been our whole thing. It's like, have a good time. Like, we like to laugh and tell these, you know, wild stories and just more commiserate, but also have some of those lessons and that we can actually use to bring value.
Well, HR Besties has quickly become one of my very favorite podcasts, as well as that of many others. I mean, you guys shot up the charts right away. Like, you're having exceptional success. I'm really, really happy for you. I think what you do is so important, and HR gets such a bad rap. You know, you hear all the time, HR is your enemy. And to your earlier point, when we were talking about layoffs, HR is most often not the group conducting them, not the one making the decisions on this. They simply are the messenger. It's like, don't shoot the messenger, right? So I love that you're bringing to bear that reality and sharing the behind the scenes. Some of the stuff that you guys share really is mind-boggling. I cannot believe these things would happen in a corporate setting. To get more insight as to what I'm talking about, go listen to the podcast. What's next for you guys?
We've had a lot of fun. We now have a slew of episodes. We just signed onto, the Forward Network with Ad Large Media, which is an all female network. So that's very exciting. We're part of that.
Yes. Breaking up the podcast, it's awesome. Yay.
Exactly. When we first went up the charts, which again, we do this all for fun, but it was pretty cool to see. Breaking Amazing. Through, especially in the business chart, which was surrounded by podcasts by men about making money, and ours was three women about making work better. Yes. Dave Ramsey, which you can see our thoughts on him on the podcast. My favorite business advice to business owners that are largely not getting big HR and legal recommendations or support for his recommendations. But we're now going to some conferences. So we'll be announcing some of those soon. We're going to go, and even some organizations are having us come to their booths at conference. And so we're going to be part of some vendor booths. And so some kind of cool stuff coming up that you'll see soon.
Awesome.
And starting to just add a little bit more episodes in and just keeping going.
I love it. Well, where can this audience go and get more from you, Ashley?
Well, you can go find me on Instagram or TikTok as Manager Method, all one word. You can find me on LinkedIn or LinkedIn Learning as Ashley Heard, H-E-R-D, not like Amber Heard. and my website is managermethod.com, where I have links to all that. And you can see more about my manager training packages and manager training that I do.
Fantastic. Yeah, everyone go follow Ashley. Her stuff is fantastic. I've been following you for a long time. I love your relatable skits, very humorous and also very impactful. So please do all of the above, and I'll link all of that stuff in the show notes. Ashley, it's been a total pleasure. My goal now is to get the third of the HR besties. Let's get Jamie on the show, and we'll just have the trifecta represented. You guys have been an absolute delight, and I'm so happy to know you. Thank you so much for being here.
Thank you, Mo. Thank you, Mo. Love your podcast, so it's all a pleasure to be on it and hear so much from you and your guests. So everybody, keep listening to Mo.
Thanks for joining us today at It Gets Late Early. I hope this episode was insightful and entertaining. Now, before you go, if you're old and work in tech, just like me, I have something really cool for you. we're putting together a job board specifically for seasoned tech workers, where we'll curate the best opportunities for experienced tech talent. If you want a place to look for work where you can trust there won't be so much bias in the hiring process, go to itgetslateearly.com and sign up so you'll be the first to know when we launch it. Thanks, and see you next time.